With this weak gesture to justice, he thereupon informed me that 80 persons had been arrested and had implicated me in a conspiracy of espionage and sabotage. I was then allowed more sleep before the second and more intensive phase of mental torture began with my appearance before the chief of the Hungarian secret police. This deputy devil, General Gábor Péter, is a man of mild aspect and personality. He's very short, slightly stooped, he walks with a limp, and affects a Stalin-like mustache. Péter has an artificial smile, soft, toneless voice. It can be infuriating because of the hypocritical consideration it expresses on occasions deemed psychologically productive. Obviously, I haven't the time to give you all the details of my stay in the netherworld of communism, but I can assure you that human history offers few parallels in calculated cruelty and torture designed to achieve a specific result. In my case, the purpose was simply to prepare me for the stellar role in a gigantic public fraud, billed as a court trial. Thus, I was hauled out of bed at night, subjected to 12 days more of hysterical grilling, fed scantily, given large doses of coffee, made to resume writing my autobiography, shouted, screamed at for hours, then plunged into hours of tomb-like, maddening silence. I answered thousands of questions. Some of them many hundreds of times, over and over again. When it became apparent I would not change my story, I was taken through endless and forbidding prison corridors to a 6x6 cell down under the building. Here, I was stripped naked and given back only my suit and my shoes. My cell had a wooden bed, a wooden pillow, and the inevitable strong, glaring light. The next 10 days was spent in this wet and unbearably cold cave. I was not allowed to wash, and there was fed only black bread and water. The master touch of evil genius, which was to become a familiar procedure, was the endless, dismaying routine repeated every 6 minutes of the steel peephole to my cell door being noisily opened and clanged shut. This went on every 6 minutes, night and day. Finally, I was cleaned up and shaved, and again brought before the unspeakable Péter, who disparagingly asked me if I had been cold. He told me that I hadn't cooperated, but that in time I would be made to see my folly. Then he gave me back my shirt, my underwear, and my socks. Physical and mental torture had shown me contact with reality, and it was apparent my captors had had decided to prepare me for my trial. This brief account of the early stages of my Hungarian nightmare does no more than just illustrate the diabolical cruelties of which the communists are capable. Behind the incessant questioning and the unremitting pressure, the malnutrition, the stimulants, screaming, shouting, the dead silence, cold, and the threats designed to breed despair. Behind all these and the other tortures is the design to break one's will. When the will is broken, the prisoner will say, and will say in open court, what the communists want him to say. The truth has no place in this. The purpose is to give the appearance of truth to the most absurd and vicious lies. Thus, the prisoner's mind, spirit, and body are attacked again and again from every angle until the will is crushed. The very body is made to rebel against one's personality. Integrity is smothered by pain. Faith is shattered against the walls of futility built up in the prisoner's imagination. Gradually, one loses hope. The victim's twisted mind tells him he's abandoned, perhaps due to be killed, and that an alleged confession will be produced anyway. So he signs the rubbish placed before him. Only because he cannot stand the interminable brutality and degradation. Since Americans live in a nation born of and devoted to freedom, they are often puzzled why communist regimes practice so many deliberate and apparently pointless cruelties upon the innocent and legitimate visitors to their lands. Perhaps I can give you a better understanding of this by filling in the background of my own case, one that is different only in degree and in detail from many others behind the Iron Curtain in Europe and now in the Orient. Hungary is, of course, a satellite of Soviet Russia, ruled by Hungarian communists who are completely controlled by their Russian masters. At the time of my arrest, Russia was still smarting from the revolt of Tito and was disturbed by the United States' promise to help the Tito government. Consequently, Russia decided she had to do something which would restore her waning prestige in Central Europe and the Balkans, and at the same time, humiliate the United States. Moreover, the Hungarian communists were being pressed to get along with the nationalization of all foreign-owned properties, especially American enterprises. Now, under these circumstances, I was a very inviting piece of jailbait. I was the only American businessman left in Hungary. I was there, the representative of an American company with properties located in Hungary, sent to negotiate with the Hungarian government because of the impending expropriation of these properties. But even more to their purpose, my company's properties in Hungary were termed a monopoly. Given this word monopoly, the communists could magnify it and exaggerate it to mean an even greater crime than their own common term. Thus, as an American businessman, I symbolized that the communists for years had been calling American imperialism greedy monopoly and rapacious capitalism. In short, I was accused of representing everything communists are determined to exterminate. These facts alone would have been enough to activate the communists. But there were several other things in my background that could be distorted and misrepresented for the political fancy that the Russians were dreaming up. For example, as I had been living in Europe since 1945, the communists had a dossier on me, as they have on practically every American resident in Europe. And that dossier, no doubt, stated that I had attended the United States Naval Academy. This military background was enough to make it possible to give a suggestion of plausibility to a spy charge. Again, since I had received part of my education in Europe, I spoke both French and German fluently, and German well enough to pass as a German in Hungary, had I so desired. They could make that appear significant also. So all in all, the communists were apparently confident they could build me into a very sinister character, representing the hated interests of an enemy nation, according to the communist viewpoint. In these circumstances, the communists obviously decided to charge me with coming to Budapest to negotiate a business deal wholly unfavorable to Hungary, emphasizing that communications are vital economic and military arteries. And then adding to this charge whatever overtones of espionage and sabotage they cared to add. The communist contrived plot, as revealed during the travesty of a trial, made all these points, and then went on to show that I was in frequent contact with officials of the Hungarian government. This was made to seem criminal in spite of the fact that my sole purpose in visiting the country was to negotiate with their government. Significantly, the government officials named as being in contact with me were all men previously marked for liquidation. I just happened to be the one who could be used as a convenient peg on which to hang them. Let me further illustrate for you the unscrupulous planning and plotting the communists put into their big public trials. They are seldom content simply to try a man for a real or a fancied crime. They must puff it up into a super colossal conspiracy involving all the elements the communists hate and fear. Thus, in my trial, a young Englishman named Sanders, in Hungary, on legitimate business, was dragged in so they could point an accusing finger at Great Britain as a slave of American capitalism. Germany was made to appear implicated by reason of the fact that a young accountant of German origin was employed by our subsidiary in Budapest. He was arrested, charged with being a reactionary tool of American imperialism. A Roman Catholic priest was involved in the trial so as to link the church to the trumped-up American plot. And finally, a girl from the minor Hungarian aristocracy, forced by circumstances brought on by the communists to earn a living as a barmaid, was arrested and held for trial. By gross exaggeration of the girl's aristocratic background, the communists made it appear that the top-flight aristocrats of Hungary were likewise engaged in the wholly imaginary plot. I will pass over the details of what the Hungarian communists call a trial, which wasn't a trial at all. It was simply an elaborate dish of distortions and inventions cooked up as an excuse for the expropriation of foreign enterprises, the liquidations, to whip up fears, and the Soviet propaganda use.